By the 3rd of October, all three Baltic states had agreed to Soviet garrisons. Stalin and Molotov turned their guns and threats on the fourth Baltic country in their sphere of influence, Finland, which they expected to buckle like the others. As the world watched Stalin and Hitler carve up the East, the Vorst was probing the submission of his comrades by investigating their wives. Paulina Molotova, the First Lady, was in danger. She was now Commissar of Fishing, a CC candidate member and mistress of her perfume empire. Yet Beria now started investigating her, discovering vandals and saboteurs secreted in her staff. She had unknowingly facilitated their espionage. The Politburo indicted Paulina. Stalin proposed her expulsion from the Central Committee. Molotov bravely abstained, showing his ability to disagree with Stalin, his confidence, and his love of Paulina. On the 24th of October, she was relieved of her commissariat, reprimanded for levity and hastiness, but declared innocent of calumnies. Permitted to run Soviet haberdashery, she returned to her accustomed magnificence, but the family was constantly watched. Stalin forgot neither Molotov's defiance nor Paulina's sins, which would return to haunt her. Stalin and Beria had considered kidnapping and murdering her. She was lucky to be alive. Beria arrested President Kalinin's wife. In a land where the head of state's wife was in prison, no one was safe. His wife and a friend were bugged, grumbling about Stalin's bloodlust. The friend was executed, Kalinina sent into exile. When petitioners asked the president's help, Kalinin used the same excuse as Stalin himself. "My dear chap, I'm in the same position. I can't even help my own wife." Not everyone was as lucky as Molotova and Kalinina. Dr. Bronka Paskryobysheva, 27, pretty wife of the chef de cabinet, rang Stalin and asked to see him alone at Kuntsevo. She came to ask for the release of her arrested brother, Metalikov, the Kremlin doctor, indirectly related through his wife to Trotsky. Bronka's mission failed, but she didn't give up. She called Beria and asked if she could come to discuss her brother. She was never seen again. Paskryobysheva waited until midnight, then called Beria at home, who revealed that she was in custody but would not discuss it. In the morning, Paskryobysheva complained to Stalin, who said, "It doesn't depend on me, I can do nothing. Only the NKVD can sort it out." A line that could not have convinced Paskryobysheva. Stalin phoned Beria, who reminded him of Bronka's Trotskyite connections. The three met, and Beria produced a confession implicating Bronka. Paskryobysheva begged Stalin to release her, using the most un-Bolshevik argument which would have moved anyone but these flintharts. "What am I to do with my girls? What will happen to them?" "Don't worry, we'll find you another wife," Stalin supposedly replied. This was typical Stalin, the man who had threatened Krupskaya that if she did not obey the party, they would appoint someone else as Lenin's widow. By the standards of the time, Paskryobysheva made a fuss, but he could do no more. Bronka was shot 2 years later as the Germans approached Moscow. Her daughter, Natalia, was told she had died naturally. Paskryobysheva brought up the girls himself with loving devotion. He kept photographs of Bronka around the house. Her destruction did not affect Paskryobysheva's relationship with Stalin or Beria. The party was just. Stalin took a solicitous interest in Natalia. Once she called her father to ask his help with her homework. Stalin answered. "Your father's not here," said Stalin. "What's the problem?" And he solved her mathematical questions. The only awkwardness in Paskryobysheva's apparent friendship with Beria was when the latter hugged little Natalia and sighed, "You're going to be as beautiful as your mother." Paskryobysheva turned green, struggled to control his emotions, and rasped, "Natalia, go and play." After the Ribbentrop Pact, Stalin liquidated the backlog of Yezhov cases, including Blackberry himself, who confessed to being an English, Japanese, and Polish spy. But he also denounced his wife's literary lovers, Sholokhov was protected by Stalin himself, but Isaac Barbil was arrested, telling his young wife, "Please see our girl grows up happy." On the 16th of January, 1940, Stalin signed 346 death sentences, a list of the tragic flotsam of the terror that combined monsters with innocence, including some of the outstanding talents of the arts, such as Barbil, theatre director Meerhold, and Yezhova's lover, the journalist Kaltsov, on whom Karpov in Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls is based, as well as Yezhov himself, his mistress, and his innocent brother and nephews. Most, though not Yezhov, were mercilessly tortured with the relish that Beria and Kubalov brought to their work. Beria called Yezhov, his predecessor, to his office to propose that if Blackberry confessed at his trial, Stalin would spare him. To his meagre credit, Yezhov refused. "It's better to leave this earth as an honourable man." On the 2nd of February, Ulrich tried him in Beria's office. Yezhov read out his last statement to Stalin, dedicated to the sacred order of Bolshevik chivalry. He denied all charges of spying, but, "I do not deny I drank heavily, but I worked like a horse. My fate is obvious." But he asked, "One thing, shoot me quietly, without putting me through any agony." Then he requested that his mother and daughter be looked after and his nephews spared. He finished with the sort of flourish that one might expect to find from a knight of the Round Table. "Tell Stalin that I shall die with his name on my lips." He faced the vyshka, the ultimate punishment, less courageously than many of his victims. When Ulrich pronounced the sentence, Yezhov toppled over but was caught by his guards, loaded into a black crow and driven to his own execution yard. Stalin's brother-in-law, Stanislav Redens, implicated by Yezhov, was shot a week later. His wife Anna was still convinced he would return, and often called Stalin and Beria to inquire. Finally, Beria told her to forget her marriage. After all, it had never been registered.